Dick Hayden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. The content of this program is intended for a blind and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Sports Illustrated Kids, and we'll get into a variety of articles here to bring you some fun information. First up is an article from the section called Warm-Up. This season doesn't count unless my team wins. This year is bogus, right? Currently, three of the big four North American men's sports leagues are playing out heavily modified versions of their usual schedules in front of no fans and often without any home field advantage. The circumstances of professional sports during a pandemic are too weird to produce legitimate results. That is, of course, unless the New York Yankees win. Look at the English Premier League. Every team eventually completed its 38-game schedule, and the winner, Liverpool, was the no-doubt champion before and after the pause, winning by 18 standing points. Still, supporters of other EPL teams razzed the Reds fans for watching their first title in 30 years under abnormal circumstances. If those champions can't escape scrutiny, what will happen to the winner of a 60-game MLB season with 16-team playoff? Through 60 games last season, the eighth-best team in American League was 30-30, the Indians. No one will accept a World Series champion with a losing regular season record and some random dude hitting 400. That is, of course, unless it's my Yankees. Theirs is an organization that just knows how to earn championships. The ability for players to voluntarily opt out also cheapens any potential titles. The Brooklyn Nets went into the bubble without Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, DeAndre Jordan, Wilson Chandler, Spencer Dinwiddie, and Taurean Prince. Who's impressed that rivals can beat what's left of them? Again, this argument does not apply to the Bronx Bombers, who had to courageously play much of last season without Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton. If anything, other teams are just getting a taste of how hard it is to be the Yankees. Even putting aside how teams get there, the moment of winning it all has been diminished. Dogpiling the fielder who catches the final out is not social distancing. Nobody's sharing a drink out of the Stanley Cup. Muted celebrations will look silly unless they take place in the Yankee Stadium, a cathedral of excellence that deserves solemn respect. There's an old riddle. If a tree falls in the forest and no one is around to hear it, does it make a sound? Well, if a team wins in front of an empty stadium, does it take the crown? Parades will have to wait, though. As long-suffering Yankees fan, I guess I can wait another year for the parade, if it means the team's first championship in 11 whole seasons, basically a lifetime. Am I right? Some argue, however, that the ability to win in disjointed and distracting situations makes the eventual champion more impressive, not less. You know, I was talking to the commissioner last week, and he made a comment, which I agree. He said, "The team that wins this will deserve a gold star, not an asterisk," Clippers coach Doc Rivers said. If you think about the mental toughness it's going to take to whoever comes out of this, it's going to come down to that. Rivers is absolutely correct. If a mentally tough team like the New York Yankees wins it all, if the Houston Astros eliminate the Yankees again, I'm calling for baseball to season plays, calling for baseball to be canceled forever. As far as the NFL goes, I guess we'll see how the season plays out. It may end up being Super Bowl LV asterisk, asterisk, asterisk. That being said, an asterisk does come from the Greek asterikos, meaning a little star. And who needs little stars if the big star in the 50-yard line at the Cowboys Stadium is involved? What? You've never met a Yankees, Dallas Cowboys, Golden State Warriors, Alabama Crimson Tide, Pittsburgh Penguins fan before? Well, now you have. Our next article is titled, "What If MLB's Opt-Out Players Teamed Up?" Is baseball missing a World Series contender worth of talent? How much talent did Major League Baseball lose this season due to players voluntarily opting out? There are two ways to answer this question. The first way is a precise mathematical solution, which carefully weighs past performance against projected future results. I answered it the other way, by throwing all those players together in a video game and simulating a 60-game season. Every hitter and pitcher who chose not to play this season had his own reasons, all of them valid. But once the number of players sitting out passed 20, it became very easy to make a roster in the text-based computer game Out of the Park Baseball 21. Team SI Kids took over one of the many spring training stadiums in Arizona and joined the National League West. The roster started with 22 opt-outs, who were all acquired from their original teams for $1. Opposing GMs had to accept these deals over strenuous objectives. The SI Kids 28-man roster was then supplemented with six free agents, RHP Carson Smith, RHP Sam Tuivasa, IF Gordon Beckham, IF Devin Marrero, IF 10 Tim Beckham, and OF Yasuo Puig. Signing Puig was admittedly a bit of a cheat. He hadn't opted out. He merely had his deal with the Braves in July fall through when he tested positive for COVID-19. But he wasn't the only outfielder Team SIK stole from the Braves. Nick Markakis initially opted out, then changed his mind 3 weeks later. Including Markakis on this team doesn't really help answer the question of how much talent is sitting out this season. But frankly, Team SIK couldn't spare him with so few players at the outset. The positions available players also necessitated tweaks to the roster. With an obvious third baseman, shortstop turned left fielder turned center fielder Ian Desmond was forced to back into the infield over the protestations of the game's programming. Similarly, Felix Hernandez was moved to the bullpen, replaced in the rotation by Joe Ross, who has starting experience, another move my virtual coaching staff resisted. Finally, however, the computer and I came to a tentative agreement on depth charts. A starting 10 took shape, and this squad had strong outfield defense, a decent middle end of the batting order, and rotational depth. Infield defense, bullpen depth, and the bench were sure to be problems. Just as in a real 2020 season, Team SIK would play a 60-game season before a 16-team playoff. Now that all that remained was to hit, simulate, and wait for my virtual championship ring to arrive via email. Game 29 felt like a turning point, down 5-1 to the Pirates at home. The SI Kids opt out. Scored 8 runs in the 8th, aided by home runs from Ryan Zimmerman and Aizen Diaz, to achieve a 12-6 comeback victory. At that point in the season, Puig anchored the lineup with 9 home runs. Despite initial struggles, the Team SIK was 14-15 and seemed to have the momentum and grit needed to blow past the 500 mark. A couple of days and a couple of losses later, however, opt-outs were 14-17 in a 5-way tie for the final playoff spot. With less than half the season to go, the race was on. Buster Posey was leading the way, battling .381. But a mid-season slump left the team at 20-30 with 10 games remaining, with lots of teams ahead of them in the standings. Team SI Kids' playoff chances stood at 0.1%. They would basically have to win out. They went 7-3 and finished just one game out of the playoffs. So what went wrong? Though the offense ranked 6th in the NL in hits and average, it lagged in plate discipline and power. Puig, who started out so hot, finished with just 10 homers. Ryan Zimmerman hit .197, starting all 60 games at first base. The computer found a lot of playing time for Devin Marrero, .588 OPS. Often at the expense of Desmond, .945 OPS. Tim Beckham hit .200 and added just 3 walks. The SIK bullpen ERA was the worst in the National League at 5.34. The biggest blow, however, was that Mike Trout played this season after earlier hints that he was thinking of sitting it out. As a baseball fan, I was relieved that he played. As the general manager of a fake baseball team, I was devastated. But this article is already a flight of fancy. Why not create a one what-if within another? So the season was simulated again. Mike Trout took over in center, Lorenzo Cain moved to the left, and Yonis Cepedes became the DH. The result? Somehow worse at 25-35. The lesson? A 60-game season is fluky. It would take hundreds of simulations to get more stable results, and I can't admit in this magazine to playing hundreds of seasons worth of a video game, even for work. I get a lot of good information by looking at the, we call them baseball cards, player cards, those little things that have a picture of a player and their name, and then on the back you've got some interesting information. So let's take a look at a few and see what we have. Here's Sophia Kennan of the Women's Tennis Association. What do we have about her? Let's see. Well, Kennan won her first career Grand Slam title of the 2020 Australian Open, okay, which propelled her to fourth in the world rankings. Kennan, who also goes by the nickname Sonya, S-O-N-Y-A, was born in Moscow, but moved to the United States with her family a few months later. She started playing tennis at the age of 5. Her height is 5'7", born 11-14-1998 in her hometown, Pembroke Pines, Florida. And did you know that when Kennan upset Serena Williams in the third round of the 2019 French Open, it was just the third time that Williams lost to a younger player in the U.S.? Then we've got Kristaps Porzingis, the Dallas Mavericks. Well, he's 7'3" tall. Boy, that's like about 2 feet taller than Sophia Kennan. Whew. Weighs 240 pounds, born August the 2nd, 1995, and his hometown is Liepāja, Latvia. I did not pronounce that right. I hope you forgive me. After missing most of the 2018-19 season with the torn ACL, which he suffered as a member of the Knicks, Porzingis finally made his Mavericks debut last October. Through 56 games, he averaged 20.1 points and 9.5 rebounds, helping Dallas to do its first winning record in 4 years. And did you know that he is easily the tallest player in history to make at least 100 three-pointers in the season, in which he has accomplished twice? That is pretty fantastic. I think we'll look at Nelly Korda next from the LPGA. Nelly is 5'10", born July the 28th, 1998, and her hometown is Bradenton, Florida. Did you know that her father, Peter, won the 1998 Australian Open, and her mother, Regina, also played tennis, representing Czechoslovakia at the 1988 Olympics? Well, in February, Korda moved up to number 2 in the Rolex World Rankings. She dropped to 4th in August. She earned her first career LPGA title in 2018 when she won the Swinging Skirts LPGA Taiwan Championship. And in 2019, she was a member of the U.S. team at the Solheim Cup. Pretty impressive stuff going on there, I think. Gerrit Cole is up next from the New York Yankees. Garrett is 6'4", weighs 220 pounds, born on September the 8th of 1990, and his hometown is Newport Beach, California. He played for UCLA, where he was a teammate with Reds pitcher Trevor Bauer. Cole set a record for starting pitchers by striking out 13.8 hitters per 9 innings in 2019 for the Astros. The following season, he signed a free agent contract with the Yankees. He won his first 3 starts for New York, running his regular season winning streak to 19. His breakout season came in 2015 with the Pirates when he went 19-8 with a 2.60 ERA. That's some impressive stuff. Kirk Cousins. We all know about Kirk. He is with the Minnesota Vikings, and he throws a mean ball. Kirk is 6'3", 202 pounds, born August the 19th in 1988. And his hometown is Holland, Michigan. Likes that cold weather. Washington selected Cousins in the fourth round of the 2012 draft after the team had taken the resigning Heisman Trophy winner, quarterback Robert Griffin III, in the first round. Cousins made his second Pro Bowl in 2019 after helping the Vikings to a 10-6 record. He threw for 3,603 yards and 26 touchdowns. His first Pro Bowl appearance came in 2016 when he threw for a team record 4,917 yards for the Washington Football Club. And now I have Raul Ruidíaz of the Seattle Sounders on the list. And Raul Ruidíaz is about 5'7" tall and 145 pounds. That's pretty good for a soccer player. Born July 25th in 1990, and his hometown is Lima, Peru, in South America. In the 2019 MLS Cup Final, Ruidíaz scored the Sounders' final goal in a 3-1 win over Toronto Football Club. It was his fourth goal in as many playoff games. In the regular season, he led the team with 11 goals despite playing in only 22 games. He netted two goals in five appearances in the 2020 MLS IS back tournament. And did you know Ruidíaz has been capped 43 times by Peru? The national team's nickname is La Banqueria, the red white, after the colors of the country's flag. And our last card member here for the day is going to be Courtney Vandersloot of the Chicago Sky. Courtney stands at 5'8" tall. She was born February the 8th, 1989. Had a birthday this month. And her hometown is Kent, Washington. Last season, Vandersloot broke her own women's NBA record by averaging 9.1 assists per game. Through the first seven contests of 2020, she was averaging 8.9 assists and 12.4 points per game as the Sky got off to a 5-2 start. Vandersloot also plays in Russia for the UMMC Ekaterinburg. And did you know, perhaps, that at Gonzaga, Vandersloot became the first player in Division I history with 2,000 points and 1,000 point assists in a career. That is pretty stunning. Pretty stunning. I think we might turn now to an article called Odd Jobs. I don't think you've heard this one yet, so let's do it. Want to make the big leagues? Talent helps, and so does work ethic. But sometimes working smarter is as important as working harder. Okay? So here are some things that are specialties. Long snapper. Their success goes unnoticed, and their mistakes cost games. This offseason, the Lions brought back their 39-year-old long snapper, Don Mulbach, for his 17th season with the team. The average NFL career lasts just 3 years. But Mulbach is a second all-time in franchise games played, 244, behind former kicker Jason Hansen. Long snappers who play center on just punts and kicks now regularly make more than $1 million a year in the NFL and can clearly have long careers. Why? Teams simply cannot live without them. When the Steelers' long snapper Greg Warren tore up his knee in 2008, linebacker James Harrison filled in. Up 14-12 against the Giants in the fourth quarter, Harrison snapped a ball over his punter's head and into the end zone for a game-tying safety. The Steelers ended up losing 21-14. Teams will pay handsomely to avoid similar disasters. Now, for a long time, being a left-handed pitcher was the surest path to the big leagues. This season, however, MLB instituted a three-batter minimum for hurlers. Bad news for the classic loogie, lefty one-out guy. Specialist relievers are still useful, however, as long as lineups feature especially fearsome left-handed hitters or multiple lefties within a single three-batter span. The Southpaw Fireman will have a place in baseball. Besides, you can always go the route of Pat Vendit, who is a switch pitcher, capable of changing hands based on the batter. He can pitch with his left hand, or he can pitch with his right hand. And then there's the face-off ace. Winning in the dot helps frame offense and defense as well as special teams. Winning face-offs alone doesn't make an NHL center, but it sure helps them stick around. Antoine Vermette retired in 2019 after 1,046 NHL games with a 56.6% win rate at the dot. Even as his point totals lagged in his latter seasons, his face-off efficacy scored, reaching 62.3% in 2016-17 with the Ducks at the age of 34. Your long snapper practice will pay off. The center bends down and tries to time the exact start of the play. And then we have the three-point shooter. The long-distance shot has never been more important, so practice behind the line. Logic might hold that in a world in which even 7-foot players are expected to contribute from beyond the arc, the dedicated three-point specialist might be less important. Not so. The rise of deep attempts represents not an attempt to eliminate one-dimensional players, but a general acceptance about the importance of the tray. So, while the traditional center may be extinct, pure shooters like Kyle Korver remain coveted by teams. We're going to read something down, them's the rules. You're out. Usually it takes a heinous infraction to get kicked out of a game. These DQs, however, range from unluckily to unnecessary. So here's a listing of about a half dozen different ones about mistakes and what happens. Number one mistake, Novak Djokovic's fourth round matchup against Pablo Carreño Busta at this year's U.S. Open abruptly ended when Djokovic hit a ball in frustration and it struck a line judge in the neck. The default was unlucky. He wasn't aiming or even looking backward, but that was part of the problem. The rules on abuse of balls specify recklessly hitting the ball out of anger. The lesson, don't ever take out your frustration on the equipment or an official. Number two on the list, circular argument. Former third baseman Adrian Beltre has a sly sense of humor and a superstitious streak. Both got him in trouble in 2017 when umpire Jerry Davis objected to Beltre's habit of warming up next to the on-deck circle instead of on it. He simply moved the circle. Beltre claimed he wasn't being sarcastic. Davis disagreed. Not so steady Eddie comes in number three. Golfer Eddie Pepperell was disqualified at the 2019 Turkish Airlines Open for running out of golf balls after he hit too many into the water. 4 months later, he was eliminated from the Qatar Masters for signing an incorrect scorecard. In July, he joked, we think, about almost getting his third DQ for losing his pencil at the British Masters. Number four is no laughing matter. Tim Duncan earned the only ejection of his NBA career for laughing. Referee Joey Crawford teed up Duncan once and then booted him for chuckling about his first foul. The NBA suspended Crawford for the rest of the 2007 playoffs for allegedly asking Duncan to fight during the incident. That was a bad one. Number 5, asleep on the job. During an unusually long argument between his manager and an ump in a game back in 1920, going back in history here, Hall of Famer Ed Rausch decided to take a nap in center field. When the game resumed, the ump tossed the outfielder for being asleep. After teammates roused him, Rausch started a protracted shouting match of his own with the official. Can you imagine deciding to take a nap out in the field while an argument was going on? And number 6 on the list, doomed demo. Jamie Collins' first game with the Lions ended when the linebacker got tossed after headbutting. Referee Alex Kemp. Collins was just demonstrating what he believed Bears running back David Montgomery was doing wrong, leading with his helmet. With his eyes looked down, however, Collins accidentally took his reenactment just a little bit too far. I think we'll look at a few more of some very outstanding sports performers. Kingsley Coman for Bayern Munich, forward for football, as they call it, soccer we call it. 5'10" tall, 163 pounds, born June 13th of 1996, and his hometown is Paris, France. Facing Paris Saint-Germain, Coman scored the only goal in the Champions League final in August. The trophy was the 20th of Coman's career. The 24-year-old has won a season championship every year since turning pro, including two in the 2014-15 season when he started with the PSG and finished with the Juventus. And did you know that he became the first player to score against his former team in a Champions League final? And Colin Morikawa, a 5'9", 160-pounder on the PGA Tour, born February 6, 1997, in California. Well, since turning pro in 2019, Morikawa has won three tournaments, including the PGA Championship in 20. He shot a 64 in the fourth round, equaling the round for the best final day score in the tournament history. Morikawa made the cut in his first 22 pro events, the second longest streak to start a career. Tiger Woods made the cut in his first 25 events. And did you know, for the first 39 times it was held, the PGA Championship was a match play competition. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. We hope you have enjoyed it. I'm Dick Hayden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and be sure to listen in next time.